welcome to the latest episode of the SGFC, Atlantis Edition. I would just like to say that if I sound like crap this episode, it's because I'm sick. I'm getting over it, but I still kind of got the stuffy nose and a little bit of cough, so... I got sick for my first week of teaching, and, you know, stupid little brats, they already got me sick, bastards. But they're good. On to other things. First and foremost... Okay, that was a little bit weird. Right as I was writing this, I was watching the end of the 200th episode of Stargate SG-1, and right as I was typing first and foremost, Martin Lloyd said first and foremost. Just a weird coincidence. I know, but let's get on to, the fanfiction contest. It's still running, and Leon and I have decided that the contest will remain open until the mid-season break of the Stargate series. Okay, now that I have that out of the way, I want to rant for a little bit. What am I going to rant about? Well, of course, the mid-season break. I know it's got a lot of you angry, it's got me angry. I mean, we just want the whole damn... we want the whole shebang all at one time. So, first, Sci-Fi says they're putting the show on the break so that they can have a year-round programming schedule. Maybe I'm just smarter than the execs at Sci-Fi, but would it not make more sense to run SG-1 and Atlantis through the end of their seasons than when the shows that they put on during the mid-season break, then they should put on the shows at the end of SG-1 and Atlantis that they're going to put in the middle? Why break up a show so you can claim to have year-round programming? Just doesn't make any sense. I mean, doing it, you know, do one show, then do another show. I mean, that seems like would allow for year-round programming instead of breaking them up. That's just not, it doesn't make any sense. Whatever. But Sci-Fi, get your head out of your collective butts and get your act together. And then maybe you won't have slumping ratings. Okay, that's my rant. I hope it made sense, and if it didn't, listen to it again. And if that doesn't work, just ignore me. But anyway, this show will be covering some good stuff, so let's hope the juice is worth the squeeze. And let's go through the gate.
I'm sorry, but how did I get here from Atlantis?
This week, I will be talking about last week's episode of Stargate Atlantis entitled Prodigy. Super episode is all I can say. I really enjoyed this one. It tied up a few loose ends from previous seasons. The first loose end it tied up was the creator of the nanovirus that nearly infected Atlantis when it was discovered while they were searching the city. This was an episode, I think the episode was entitled Hot Zone of Season 2. Or Season 1, I can't remember. I think it was Season 1. Yeah, because Ford was with them, so it was Season 1. My bad. From what I gathered, I think it was the replicators the ancients created who created the nanovirus to attack the ancients, of course. Secondly, it tied up how O'Neill was able to create the disruptor weapon that worked so well against the replicators the Asgard were fighting. The ancients obviously had developed something similar to fight the replicators they had created, and since O'Neill had the ancient database in his head and was able to access their knowledge of their technology they used to fight the replicators, he was able to develop a counter to the Asgard replicators. So speaking of fighting, a few episodes back I mentioned how we have yet to see an Atlantean handheld weapon, like the little gun thing, and I can't tell you how excited I was when, lo and behold, the replicators on the Replicator Atlantis had handheld weapons. I just assumed that they were of Atlantean design since they still use Atlantic technology. So that is my claim to fame for now. I predicted Atlantean handheld weapons, and that's what I got. But any Husenheimer, I want to talk some more about the replicators of the Asgard galaxy and of the Pegasus galaxy. We learn in Progeny that the ancients, in an effort to give them an edge in the war on the Wraith, decided to create a nanovirus that is instilled with such single-mindedness and anger and very little other emotion that their immediate goal would be to attack and destroy anything Wraith. However, the nanovirus progressed until they create, you know, until they made the advanced human forms of themselves. And so the ancients were really kind of threatened because they weren't working so well. So they, you know, they couldn't make effective use of them. So they decided to eliminate them. Thus, the technology existed that would eliminate the replicators the Asgard were fighting. Further, in an effort to destroy the advanced human form replicators, they sent a fleet to their home planet and laid waste to it. The problem with nanites is that it's hard to destroy something you cannot see. Thus, a few nanites survived and were able to rebuild, but they stayed hidden, off the radar of the ancients and the Wraith. The fact that the ancients had tried to destroy them enraged the AFHRs, that they switched hating the Wraith to hating the ancients, or actually they hated them both at the same time equally. But as the years, over the centuries, a rift formed between the different factions in the existing AFHRs. Some want to ascend, but the main leader has other goals, mainly unfinished business with the Atlanteans, or the Ancients. Sorry about that. How can the Asgard replicators have come from the Pegasus Galaxy when the Pegasus replicators had existed in human form for several thousand years? Simple. The replicators were only able to use the materials that surrounded them. Since, when they somehow came to the Asgard Galaxy, they did not have the required materials to create the human form, so they just used what material they could, and were still instilled with the drive to destroy their enemy. The replicators weren't able to take human form until they found the right materials. Then they advanced to human form. Thankfully, the ancients created a technology to destroy the replicators. Basically, in all, I really enjoyed this episode of Stargate Atlantis, and now since Atlantis is still hidden from the Wraith, they have to fight the replicators. And I hope to see, you know, that they they bring back a disruptor and try to modify it to work against the Atlantean replicators. So hopefully that works. Now that this discussion is over, I hope to move on to the character discussion.
Dr. Weir?
We need you.
This character discussion will be Dr. Elizabeth Weir. Dr. Elizabeth Weir is he's currently leader of the Atlantis expedition, former head of Stargate Command, and the foremost expert in treaty negotiations. In fact, she was the one who, negotiated the treaty over the Antarctic expedition, where they thought where the Atlantis outpost was, or the ancient outpost, sorry, not Atlantis. As leader of the Atlantis expedition, she is in charge of the whole operation. She decides what missions the team goes on, yet she hasn't been able to think of team designations for the Atlantis teams yet, which really kind of bothers me. I mean, you're running a somewhat military operation, and you don't have team designations to simplify your life. Instead, you call it Shepherd's Team or, you know, whatever. But she is overseen by the International Oversight Advisory, who interferes with her from time to time, but not so much at Atlantis than at the SGC. But who is Elizabeth Weir? She is quite the complex woman. She has the guts to face down the System Lords, threaten Wraith, and take command away from military leaders such as Colonel Caldwell. Well, that last bit isn't always true, but she does have a superior ranking to all of them. However, when it comes to security, military command can overrule her decisions, such as Shepard did a couple episodes ago. So far, Weir has been a formidable commander, sending teams on missions to not only attack, but also to negotiate. Some of those negotiations have backfired on her, such as with the Genii, but they have made many allies throughout the Pegasus Galaxy. Her best quality is that she trusts the people under her and is willing to trust their instincts in the field. Not very many leaders can have that said about them. Her best characteristic, in my opinion, is her ability to make decisions and stick with them and take the consequences of her decisions. Unlike others, mainly the IOA, she's not afraid to act, and boy does she act. We have seen so far this season how she is not afraid to make decisions that put other people's lives at risk. You know, a great example is, like I said, when she's being grilled by the IOA, and she makes the choice despite being second-guessed by them, even after she had their approval to, you know, make an alliance with the Wraith. A war should not be run by committee because people like to talk too much, and then, you know, you can't make a decision, and eventually you'd be destroyed. So, in my opinion, one person makes the decisions and lives with them, good or bad. And I believe that is called the burden of command. This is sounding a lot like another episode of Atlantis, but that's alright. Now, on a side note, I think Weir has feelings for Shepard, beyond just friends. But she won't act on them, because it would jeopardize her position on Atlantis. She really likes leading the expedition, and she doesn't want to give it up, say to Colonel Caldwell, and she fights for what she wants. I guess that's what I really have to say. She's a fighter, as we actually saw in the most recent episode of Atlantis, when the replicators are trying to take her over. Really, it's all about, I have to say, on Weir. I mean, what else can be said? She's a kick-butt leader. This week in Versus, I'm going to throw into the pit of despair two foes, so single-minded they swarm anything that gets in their way. They destroy and assimilate anything their opponents throw at them. Who are these vicious beings that cannot be stopped? None other than the replicators, of course. I am pitting the Atlantean replicators against the Asgard replicators. In my opinion, this fight will be amazing. And if it were actually to happen, it would last for generations, if not millennia. Seeing as how both replicators scavenge technology to regenerate, I believe the Asgard replicators would take over an Atlantean replicator ship, and take control much as they have done to Asgard, and that ship would just be the first of many. Since both replicators can adapt quickly, it would be an escalation of wars similar to the Cold War, both sides developing weapons of mass destruction, and both sides developing counters to those weapons. Eventually, both sides would come to a stalemate, content to coexist in a constant state of readiness if one side attacks. That is how the fight will end, in a stalemate, actually. I know, not very exciting, but think about the fight. I mean, in the first assault, the Atlantean AFHRs would gain the advantage because of their Atlantean technology. But the Asgard AFHRs can adapt, as seen in their counters to the disruptor. They would send out their bug replicators to take over a few Atlantean ships, and then even the fight out, and eventually repel the initial wave. Each side would then shore up their defenses, and, you know, testing the defenses of the other. And like I said, eventually it would be a stalemate, but it would still be a cool fight. So that's about all I have to say on the replicator versus replicators. If you have any comments, you know what to do.
It's a portal that allows intergalactic travel. The program has been in operation for over 10 years.
Well, thanks for listening to this episode of the SGFC. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Just the last few notes before I go off-world tonight. I recently checked out GateWorld.net and discovered that they rolled out GateWorld 2.0. Which to me looks a lot better. Well, I should say much better. I still like the previous layout, but this layout has easier access to many features, whereas in the older one you had to, you know, do a few extra clicks. And then secondly, over at GateWorld.net, they have an article about Amazon.com or your favorite online DVD store, so that you can purchase or pre-order Season 9 of Stargate SG-1. Now, if you do it at Amazon.com, you save about $15, I believe, when I checked it. Or you know what you can do? Instead of saving $15, you can save the total cost of the season by submitting a fan fiction story to either Leon at zb1991@gmail.com or myself at sgfc, I don't even know my own email address, sgfancast@gmail.com. Remember, this contest is running until the mid-season break of Stargate, so you have some time. I think about a month, actually. So I hope you all have a wonderful week. Until next time, this has been Bastion Z. Have a great time off-world. I know I will.